Hello, grandkids, and welcome to Stunt Granny Audio Presents OPA number 141. This is Kevin DeFrango. Sitting beside me is Ken Phillips. In between us is Spike.
Yeah, we have a new co-host tonight, and I'm not sure how much he's going to be chiming in.
If he brings a ball to us later, I've always wondered if anyone's noticed that you can hear meowing with a meowing. With a ball in the mouth, because he'll do that during some of the regular Stunt Granny shows. I'm not sure that he's done it during one of our shows, but one of the OG SGAs, I know that Spike had to have been on those at some point, but no one has talked to me about my cat being too loud. One of my cats being too loud.
Well, they say that when a cat meows, they only do that when they're talking to a human being. Like when they're talking to other cats or trying to communicate, they're able to be more subtle. So that's kind of, what I'm saying is Spike was trying to tell you something, Kevin, in that moment. Do you have any idea what he could have been saying?
I'll tell you what, they are not very subtle when they talk to other cats. I'm going to throw that out there. They are louder than they normally are. There's a lot of hissing and...
Oh, yeah. Well, see, okay.
There's a whole lot of teeth baring. Like, yeah.
But they're not meowing, though.
No, they are not meowing, but I would not call that subtle in the least.
Thank you for the correction, Kevin. I do appreciate you keeping me on the study track here. That was probably not the right word to use. but yeah. So, I don't know. It's probably rude to talk with something in your mouth, though, I would say, just as a general rule.
They do love to do it, though. they are very good at both of them. Both Spike and Angel love to carry balls and meow at the same time.
That could be cool. You know, very polite for cats, then. I don't know. There's a different set of rules.
It sounds very funny, just because... You can tell how muffled it is because there's a ball in their mouth.
Right. So it's a weird sounding meow?
Yeah, if you hear them, because Spike doesn't meow that much really, and just in general. But you can tell just how muffled it is because even in the random times that he does actually meow, it's much clearer.
Well, I kind of hope that Spike does end up... meowing with that ball in his mouth, because it sounds like it's kind of an interesting experience. I hope that we could offer that to our listeners as well.
They are quite charming.
Yeah. I feel like I've reached a new level in my Spike's comfort with me tonight. He's been very chill here, so.
Yeah, this is, I think this is the first time he's not, has he done an Ottoman show for us yet?
Not that I have noted, I guess.
Yeah, and we need to do a sunroom show since it's getting to be that nicer temperature and not like baking hot out there.
Yeah, we're having some decent fall temperatures out there as part of an OPA weather report. yeah, I've enjoyed the weather with and hopefully it'll stick around for a little while before, you know, we take the turn for winter time.
Before summer comes back again.
Summer comes back and then it, you know, we'll hit immediately to winter. I think that's the usual progression that I've noticed.
Yeah, that's what I'm waiting for. I'm waiting for second summer and then immediate winter and it starts snowing, like in the middle of December.
Yeah. Yeah, or God forbid, November.
Yeah, I think it did that once and everyone freaked out recently, but then it didn't snow for like another 3 weeks.
Right. Oh, the joys of Ohio weather.
You know, speaking of fall, definitely something that we love to consume come this time of the year.
All right, Kevin, I'm sorry, I gotta jump in here. I really hate that term consume. I feel like you're not really when you're watching something, you're not consuming anything. Can we all agree on this? Like, whatever
your
it is
brain,
still
your
there.
Your brain is consuming it. But your eyeballs are consuming it.
You're absorbing it, maybe, but consuming to me is like you're using it up. You're consuming it. And that's not what happens when you're watching something. Like, plenty of people can still watch it, even if I'm watching it.
So we're consuming Belltime beers currently.
True. Yes.
Full disclosure. Yes. We are not consuming the Green Bay at Chicago game.
Yes. I feel like that is a very important point that needs to be made, just because everybody uses that word the wrong way.
Wow. I did not realize I was going to start.
You walked into some a quicksand there. Yeah. Sorry. but that one has just been a pet peeve of mine for a while. And I have the platform to do something about it at the moment. So I had to use that to get that point across.
You will correct your co-host who talks about consuming wrestling all the time and somehow try to transform that. You know, I'll give it the old college try, but I'm not making any promises.
No, I know. It's just me, I guess. Society seems to have moved on. It's like, you ever see The Omega Man or with Charlton Heston?
No.
I'm like the last human who still understands the meaning of the word consume, filled with the post, you know, in some kind of post-apocalyptic mutant zombie nightmare world. But that's all right. I will find the strength to carry on for our first topic here, Kevin, which, as you said, involves one of our favorite signs of the fall, I guess you could say, the football season.
Do watch definitely more pro football than college football, though I definitely keep my eye on the college variety quite a decent amount.
Yeah, it's same here, I would say. And of course there's no XFL yet, but you know, that could be a third option, I suppose, at some point. It would be nice if they could, you know, sidebar, but they, one article I read recently said that that would be kind of nice if players were able, instead of playing in college, to play for the XFL. So like they could earn some money at least before they're eligible to play in the NFL. Because I believe that there is that rule, right?
Correct. Yeah, you're not allowed to be paid for pretty much anything, even your own likeness, which is completely bonkers.
Well, but then the NFL, furthermore, I think, say that you have to have been 3 years outside of high school to play in the NFL, yes. Right?
But that is still correct.
I don't know if the XFL would not have that rule, but then that would kind of make sense as kind of like a minor league then in some ways.
Yeah, it would be kind of interesting. That's not something that that I've thought about, but that could. I wonder if, I don't know if there are insurance reasons that the NFL doesn't do that? ? I mean, you know, obviously they're still playing football. I do feel like,
I feel like it's more money reasons. Like they're trying to make a deal with the college programs to, you know, have them develop their players for them, basically.
Well, there's definitely that. I do think that physically things change a little bit during that time period. I do feel like the freshman 15, though that might not still be a thing exactly, I do feel like one's body fills out during that time frame.
Sure. And it's not like, I guess in the NBA where you are allowed to go into the league early, it's not like every player does that, but a lot of good ones do.
Oh, well, yeah, and I mean, the same can be said for hockey.
Right.
You know, the elite ones, yes, but like the majority of people do not take that route.
Yeah, so I don't know. It does make a lot of sense to have that, because it's, especially for those top players, it seems like it's really kind of a shame that they're risking basically, they could end their career before it begins. All right.
Oh.
and sidebar. We're talking NFL.
And sidebar.
This season's going to be starting with a bang up game here, Kevin.
Yeah, for our Pittsburgh Steelers, we have definitely brought this topic to the forefront the last, year or so on the show. Mm-hmm. They open the year against the hated Super Bowl defending New England Patriots at Gillette Field. It is a place that we have not seen the Steelers win at in quite some time. Right. Definitely pre-Brady.
Well, they're right.
Well, actually, they've never won at Gillette Stadium itself, actually, is the one thing, the one stat that they mentioned in here.
Oh, really?
Yes, and that was 2002.
Well, that, that blows, but I guess, I mean, first game of the season, I feel like there's a chance we could beat the Patriots.
I was amused when someone pointed out that a lot of the Patriots' losses come early in the season.
Yeah.
And everyone's like, oh, they're on the brink, and then all of a sudden they rip off 8 straight games to end the season. And that 4-4 is like, oh, whatever, we're 12-4. Good luck, suckers.
Yeah. It does seem like they have a little bit of a rhythm to their season where they kind of are starting out slow a little bit. And maybe that's intentional to, I don't know, Belichick supposedly playing six-dimensional chess perhaps knows this and is conserving his player's strength somehow. Telling them to play at 80% of full strength, like a Dragon Ball Z character.
I have not yet revealed my full power.
He doesn't let Brady reach his final form until at least halfway through the season, maybe.
Tom Brady's not allowed to go full Super Saiyan until halfway through the season.
Damn it. Brady, I told you. yes. Well, it's either way, I think it should be an interesting game to see. First game of the season is always kind of interesting, but against the Patriots, yeah, it's a little extra oomph to it.
Yeah, and there's not much to be said too. Like, I know that there was the one thought in the back of my mind at the end of last year when the Steelers just missed the playoffs. I'm like, and the Patriots started getting on that roll. I'm like, motherfucker, they beat the Patriots. They were the last team to beat the Patriots last year.
Oh, yeah.
17-10. Granted, Heinz Field, in which I think I've, I saw it in another article, but I believe Tom Brady is 8-3 overall against the Steelers, meaning is 3-3 in Pittsburgh, and he's 5-0 in at Gillette Stadium.
Right.
4 wins during the regular season there, and 1 in the playoffs.
Yeah, it's he's enjoyed success, we could say, I think. Against the Steelers.
And one thing that to me really makes this interesting is that, A, I guess I hadn't realized that the last 2 years the Steelers have had the most sacks of any team. They led the NFL in sacks the last 2 years. And getting to Tom Brady has always been one of the keys to success. In getting wins, I feel like, against him.
Mm-hmm.
And the Steelers have, at least done that a few times in the Tom Brady era. Unfortunately, it hasn't usually been in the playoffs, which everyone complains about. They kind of kept their season from, definitely being out of the playoffs last year with that Patriots win. That was kind of one of those big ones. It's just like, oh, crap, they need to beat the Patriots to stay in the playoff hunt this early in the season. this sucks.
Yeah.
And they did it. And this defense, I'm really excited about it.
Well, that's what I was going to go to, Kevin. I mean, this is going to be a, I would say very different team than last year. Of course, on offense, there's been some players who have moved on to other pastures.
And I know I've said it in shows past, the no Le'Veon Bell does not bother me as much as the no Antonio Brown, because Antonio Brown actually was on the field last year.
He seems to be having trouble getting on the field for his current team. So I don't know. Maybe he wouldn't be there the same even if he was there in a way.
He might not have been there mentally.
Even if he was there, he wouldn't be there. You follow me?
Yeah.
So that's unfortunate, but I don't know what you do about that. Because his situation now, at least I understood Le'Veon Bell's situation last year. He was trying to
get guaranteed money.
Right. It doesn't seem like, Antonio Brown just got signed to a contract with the Raiders. It doesn't seem to be making sense for him not to be showing up for, I don't know if you saw, but he was fined for not showing up to mandatory team meetings. And then he posted a picture of the letter to Instagram and kind of was complaining about it, saying that it was, insinuating that it was, ridiculous for them to be doing this. Or in any way inappropriate for them to be doing this.
It was another one where I'm like, fuck it. I saw the headline and just swiped right, man. I did not read it. I'm like, it's one of those things.
I rose to that bait, unfortunately.
Well, it's one thing. They've got to replace that production. No matter whether he's kind of gone off the deep end or not with his new team, which is, I definitely seem to be on that side that he's kind of gone off the deep end. And there's also the in no way real evidence that he has not been the same ever since Vontaze Burfict tried to remove his head from his shoulders.
Well,
in Cincinnati.
I think that's a valid point there.
I would not remove that play from any mention of his shenanigans, because there weren't really shenanigans before that. Like, he was kind of a little over the top and always kind of found some crazy way to come to training camp and all that good stuff. I always felt like there was a little showman in him, but the complete craziness has kind of gone on since then.
Yeah, I think there's one thing to have sort of a clownishness, and maybe that's not the right word either, Kevin.
No, you want to correct me? Yeah, I would not go with clown. He was just a little flamboyant, because I don't feel like the stories of him sleeping at team meetings or anything like that ever, I don't feel like I ever heard anything like that about him prior. And even honestly, he didn't have problems until last year, I guess. Well, last year was bad.
Well, this, we could be, thinking about cumulative effects over time. So, there's been that bad hit you're referring to, but then also repeated hits on, a normal play throughout the game,
Yeah.
That could compound things potentially. So, I guess a sobering reminder here, a little bit of the dangers of football.
Unfortunately.
It is, it's a bummer to think about if somebody is kind of going to be losing their mental faculties the rest of their life in some ways because of playing the game of football. So I don't know. Maybe they'll actually be able to.
And again, that is no sure thing. Maybe he's just kind of gone off the deep end for other reasons. Yeah. I'm not well, and I can't say deep end because, by all accounts, when he's actually in camp, things have gone smoothly.
Yeah, and you know, lots of people have issues with mental health, so it's you know, something that should be looked at, I think, and possibly treated. So hopefully he can be well again or deal with whatever he's going through. But yeah, I am still looking forward to a good game this weekend with the
I have somewhat high hopes that they can finally pull off a win at Gillette. You know, again, the defense, I think, and you were kind of talking about how the team's going to be different.
Yes.
And we kind of went to the, you know, talking about what was lost on offense there. And I think that's part of it. The offense, it's been so, and I mean, we talked about this at least personally for a while, that it's been so wild that it's just like, oh, the defense is garbage. The offense has got to pick them up for, I would say, at least the last 5 years, if not a little bit longer than that.
Yeah, certainly. I would say the last few years, it's been offense only, in feeling, at least.
Yeah, because there was the little bit of flash when Ryan Shazier was in there, and when he went down in Cincy,
it seemed like it was truly offense only after that.
Yeah, things fell apart pretty quickly without him. And having Devin Bush, I know that you know, Devin Bush is very fond of saying that he's not going to be Ryan Shazier, which is completely fine as long as we have someone that isn't the dead carcasses that they've filled in the season and a half since Shazier went down. I'm gonna be good to go.
Oh man,
because John Bostic was terrible last year, and I think they got Sean Spence out of retirement to have him play to fill in for the last half of the year after Shazier got hurt the year before that. And it's just like, oh my gosh, if your best option was someone that played for your defense a few years ago and has been out of the league for the most of the year.
Wow.
I'm not feeling great about this.
No, and I believe the history has shown that we should not have felt great about that. Things didn't really go the way that we would have wanted last season, for sure.
No, I mean, winning record still, which that's one of those ones that I know that Shahid was talking about the Antonio Brown stuff. But I, other than taking away the red flags from Mike Tomlin, I'm good with Mike Tomlin.
Yeah, and the timeouts, we should say, for the most part.
Yeah, his time management skills have been called into question a number of times by multiple people. And though I do not think that they are as bad as some persons, they are not particularly, they're not a strong suit.
No. And I should say that people in this room have also called that into question, including myself. Although, I don't know.
I don't think it's as overshadowing as, like, I feel like Andy Reid was known for that for a long time. And I'm like, oh my gosh, like, I could just, like, see the mistakes all the time. Like, I'm not saying Tomlin doesn't make the mistakes then, but
that's true.
I do think that he makes some curious choices from time to time. Because I'm trying to think, there was that time last season where, didn't he let the clock run and saved a timeout for some reason, but it cost them 30 seconds? But he felt like he was going to save more time if he waited to call the timeout on their possession,
I believe. I do seem to remember something along those lines last year.
And after I kind of heard the explanation, it made a little more sense to me. I'm like, oh, okay, I didn't kind of see that.
I still don't think he was right, though.
No, I think that still ended up costing him more time.
Yeah.
In the long run. Like, I think they ended up, they might have won the game, I'm not sure. But whatever the case was, I do think that it was a net negative
If we could only change one thing, I think it would be to get the challenge flags away from him and maybe have a dedicated...
That is DEFCON level 10 kind of a situation in my opinion.
That's probably his most, glaring weakness would be challenging.
I want to... Is it Dan Rooney II that's running the team now?
Think so.
He's even like, oh, we've looked at adding an assistant for the challenge flags or something like that. I'm just like, oh my god.
Yeah, do it.
I was
do
like,
it.
Yes, please. And then they're like, oh, well, we need them to do something more than just that. It's just like, no, no. If they do just that, I will help you pay them.
I mean, would you say that somebody whose job was just doing the challenge flag, I don't know what. Would they be making, like, you know, $50,000 a year, something along those lines?
I would think so. I mean, I think that seems like enough.
Yeah, I mean, people do...
You know, just have an intern come in, and that's his only job. Is just, he's played Madden his whole life.
That's true. I mean, you would have to know... you would have to be well-versed with football, I would say. Like, this isn't a job that you would just bring... any Joe Schmo off the street in to do.
Well, yeah. Although, I do think that some Joe Schmoes have a better sense of when to throw. There's got to be someone in the booth that says something to him, too. And it's just like, who is that person?
I think there should be, like, a fan challenge. Like, they should have, like, an app where if enough people are like, challenge, challenge, challenge... Like, then they do a challenge.
Oh, my God. That would be so terrible.
Come on.
It would make games 100,000% more interesting if every... Like, so are you just saying just the home team can do the voting, or...
That's an interesting question. I mean...
You know, because there are a lot of Steelers fans on the road. Do they get the vote, or is it just a home team only? Because that still makes it at least 1,000% more interesting. Like, if the hometowns or the city's fans can screw them or not screw them, like, it'd be so funny that you can't blame the coach for that one. If you challenge, the coach comes out in the press conference, I don't know why those damn fans challenged that. I would love for that to happen.
Because you know the coaches would be pissed if it's like they're using up a challenge.
Yeah, and they, you guys fucked me. You left me one less time out. And you wonder why my two-minute management isn't good.
I really like this idea. You know, I was almost leaning to thinking, like, should it be just for the people in the stadium? Like, would that be, like, an added bonus for, being
for live attendance?
Yeah.
Oh, I think now we're really talking. I think you need to be there.
Although you could make the argument that seeing it at home, you might get a better, chance to look at the replay and everything.
Yeah, you're definitely going to have a better view of that stuff.
So, I don't know, man. I could see wanting to reward people, like, as a business decision of the NFL for actually, like, getting people to come into the stadium.
Yeah, I'm not sure that they're really having attendance problems, though. So,
well,
but that does incentivize, people to come.
It just seems like more and more there's less reason to go to the games. But maybe the fans are still showing up. I don't know. It's
there's still something to me about the live experience that trumps TV.
Mm-hmm.
Even though I've got to admit, I have not ever really bought particularly great seats. I had great seats once when I went to a Steelers game. The rest of the time that I've been at football games, I have been in terrible at best seats for viewing. Like that time that we went down to Cincinnati to Paul Brown Stadium.
That was a crazy game, man.
It was... the most bonkers game that you could ever go to, pretty much.
Yeah, and that was, I would say that's a good, I'm glad that I went to that game, for sure.
But we were in the middle of nowhere. Like, we were, like, way up, almost in the tallest part of the highest section of the stadium. So we were nowhere close to the field. And it was just like, yeah, we had no idea half the shenanigans that were going on down the field because everyone looked like goddamn ants.
Well, that was the game where Joey Porter picked a fight with one of the players on the Bengals, right?
Well, that was after the Antonio Brown hit.
Yeah.
Is when that happened.
Right.
And Pac-Man Jones took the bait and went after Joey Porter and got a 15-yard penalty, which
was very effective in helping the Steelers, I believe.
Yes.
Yeah. So, yeah, that was one of the things that happened in that game.
Yeah, so I don't know if I would necessarily need that to go again. I mean, I would like to go again. It's definitely not something that's a I need to do it every week thing. It is nice to sit back, relax, and have a beverage at home.
Yeah.
Like I will be doing Sunday night. I mean, that is kind of nice that they're already on a primetime game to kick the season off.
For sure.
I did get the Sunday package again this year just to save me from having to go to a bar. So anyone that wears black and gold and cannot watch games are welcome over during those evenings.
All right.
I mean, we're pretty excited about that. Ken, you have been pretty excited about disc golf these days.
Right. Yeah, and that's another thing that's probably a good activity to do around this time of year, not being too hot out anymore.
Yeah, a little more moderate temperatures. I could appreciate a nice. I have not done the disc golfing in probably a solid calendar year at this point, if not a wee bit longer than that. But you did.
I've been going through something of a disc golf renaissance, I guess you'd call it. I had played fairly regularly there for a couple of years, I guess, like at least in the nicer during the summertime or nicer weather. But kind of fallen out of practice the last couple of years, I would say. Never really felt like I was very good at it. But then I realized that I could probably learn by watching videos on YouTube, which is how I've learned to do, you know, things from repairing my dryer at home to putting together my arcade machine at home.
Oh.
So, anyway.
I thought you were going to talk about rebuilding your swing in disc golf.
And so I did. I learned how to get a better throw in disc golf. Some people may call it frisbee golf, although technically it is just called disc golf since frisbee is a registered trademark of some company that makes frisbees.
Oh, is that why it's called disc golf? Huh?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Did not know this part of the lore.
But and technically, if you were to handle what they use in disc golf, you would see the difference between that and a frisbee. It's really not it's shaped a little differently because they end up going pretty far a lot of times.
Yeah, that was the crazy thing. You sent me a link to is it Paul Macbeth?
That's right. So this is kind of what maybe part of our series of greatest sports heroes of their respective sports.
Of their generation.
Yes. And Paul Macbeth has won five pro disc golf world championships, which I believe is a record. And we, this week, watched a video.
Oh,
of...
so that just happened this week.
No, we watched it this week. Yeah, but I think it was a year ago that this happened. He got a minus 18 on an 18-hole course, which is the first time that had happened, I believe.
I did not. You may have watched all 18 holes. I did not, but It was impressive just off the bat, because there's a par three to start the course, and it was like 340 to the pin, and this guy overshot the pin, Macbeth overshot the pin. I'm like,
yeah,
I wouldn't even dare to think about getting half. Well, I'd get halfway there,
right? That's kind of how I feel like, yeah.
My goal would be to putt for par on a par three. And this guy was having none of that.
Making the birdie look very easy, I would say, yeah.
And that that was the first thing that impressed me, is that he still kind of had a decent length birdie to shoot for. And I don't know what it was always about that. Like, I always felt at least somewhat decent about the tee shots. But when I had those mid-rangers to try and put one in, like, I always had a real hard time with them, because like I never felt like you wanted to throw it too hard, because I always felt like I ended up overshooting the basket way too much.
Right, and then you're just going back and forth, you know, walking around the basket trying to get it in there.
Yeah, and his accuracy, I guess, really more than anything, was pretty impressive to just kind of put it in, you know, and I don't know, 10, 15 foot or something like that.
Yeah, I mean, he made, I think during that round, at least, you know, a few that were outside the 30-foot range. So that's...
Oh, wow.
That's pretty good. But I believe I saw him make a 60-foot putt at one point, and it could have been a different round, but it's pretty impressive. One thing I've noticed too is that to combat that effect where you overshoot, you know, the basket, I guess if people haven't played disc golf, it's similar to golf, except you're not using a stupid stick to hit a ridiculously tiny little ball. You're throwing something, you know, a disc that flies like a frisbee, and you then play the next shot from where that one landed, similar to golf, and try to get it to a basket, which is a metal basket that has a rim with some chains hanging down and a basket below that, so that if you hit the disc into the basket, into the chains, it'll knock it basically down into the basket, is the idea. So yeah, getting it into the basket is the goal in the fewest number of throws. So yeah, probably should have said that up top.
I figured it was somewhat self-explanatory, but yeah, it's probably good to fill in those not in the know.
Yeah.
This guy, at least when I was watching it tonight, we watched maybe about the first half dozen holes or so, and then we skipped quite a bit ahead there. And it was pretty interesting that he realized around the 16th hole that he had a chance to go 18 under,
mm-hmm.
First time ever. And, you know, yeah, he just kind of said that that was weighing on him a little bit, but it certainly did not show in his play. I was pretty interested, and now I'm not really surprised that someone at his level does it in some ways. But it was kind of interesting how he's talking about the different discs that he used, and some of them dependent upon the type of throw that he wanted to go with.
Yeah, and that's something I've kind of gotten into lately too, is kind of learning more about the different kinds of discs. And like, I went to like a decent disc golf shop actually, because I also went to like Walmart to look for disc golf discs, and it's kind of a mess there, and you really don't know what you're getting, and they only really have like three different kinds or so. But I went to this actual disc golf shop, and they had, you know, a wider selection of discs, but also like a chart that would tell you kind of the characteristics of each disc and like the expected flight path. You have like overstable versus understable discs, which make it, you know, so that it'll fade either straight or to the right. Versus most discs want to go off to the left when you're throwing a normal forehand. I think those are called the overstable that go that way. And then the understable are tending to either go straight or more even to the right after the, when they're fading. And there's different, like, you know, there's like a chart that you can look at and kind of see the disc that would fit the needs you what you want it to do. And so, like, these guys know what they're doing when they're picking their different discs, depending on the course, where the tee is in relation to the fairway and where they want it to go at the end of the shot. They can pick the disc. And also, some discs, if they would, you know, they can, like, overthrow it, basically, like a disc that's not meant to be thrown at that speed, they can throw it fast enough to, like, alter its characteristics. So, like, they kind of know what they're doing with all that stuff. And it is interesting to watch.
Yeah, again, to me, that makes it very similar to regular golf, where you're picking, you know, which club to use because of the distance,
mm-hmm.
or, you know, maybe situation, depending. And, kind of having a variety of those is kind of nice, because really, I essentially just had, and maybe I still have, a long-range one, a medium, and a putter.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and maybe if we ever hit this shop again, I'll show you, because there's some that, like, I showed. I think part of my problem was I was using discs that are supposed to be thrown at a higher speed. Like, they really are only operating correctly if they're being thrown at a speed that really I can't throw a disc that fast.
Gotcha.
So by getting some, like, lower speed discs, it's actually improving my game. So there's stuff like that to consider, that the more you kind of learn about things, it actually helps you out. So, surprise.
Shocking.
Yeah. But, we're going to have to, get out on the course here one of these, weekends, I say.
Yeah, it's certainly something that, that can be done and, should be done.
Yes.
Maybe I can swing a Saturday at some point.
It is both right and just, I must say.
Wow, someone went to church recently. I don't know who that was, but...
I didn't know if you would pick up on that reference or how recently you've been to church, but...
you know, we're just going to say that we still go when we go back to Altoona.
So another place that people sometimes go to, Kevin, is schools. And you are a architect. I think we've put that out there before.
Yeah, and there was it has also been put out there on the show recently that I've changed jobs.
True.
quite recently. And there was a chance, had I not taken the job that I currently have, that I would have been designing schools. And it was not one of those things that I had thought about when I saw this article on Slate.com. That, you know, some people are designing with the idea of a school shooting happening.
Mm-hmm.
And it is... maybe, well, it's definitely influencing their design. I wish this article honestly would have gone into that a little bit more than they did, to be honest with you. I feel like they used it as a backdrop to talk, because there's a lot of things that, to me, didn't influence the design in some ways. So much is what material they were using to design with.
Yeah, they talked about using a lot of bulletproof glass, which makes sense, I think, even though it is about 10 times more expensive than regular glass.
Yeah, so that's like that to me is a cost issue more than it is a design issue.
And I remember reading in there about... a kind of moat that they had built around the, there was actually kind of different styles that they were kind of talking about, I think. Some of the more, like, almost military grade, defenses versus more of a hidden defenses, almost, I guess you'd say. Like,
right.
having something like a moat. Well, it acts as a moat, but it's like a rain, drain, basically, a way for the rain to permeate into the ground. But it also acts as a moat around the school and restricts access to the school while still...
Yeah, because it's like a retention pond, essentially.
And not feeling as though you're in a, prison, basically, when you're in the school. Because you look out and it can still be a low window that kids can look out, but still be, above the ground and inaccessible from outsiders. It's kind of how they were describing it. So that's kind of like a cool, I think, and thoughtful design that is doing the job of it seems like it would do the job of keeping kids safe while not making them feel like they're in a like a militarized or prison environment.
Yeah, I would say that our schools were kind of that variety. And I can see how, because I know that schools have certainly developed into a more open kind of a concept than when we went to school, because everyone's like, oh, hey, not being stuck in a box is kind of nice, which is not shocking, really, at all. But, once we got some studies to confirm that natural daylight helps. Everyone's like, hey, let's open these things up. And there's some pretty nice schools out there. And I guess that was the one thing that I was kind of interested in about, is just the fact that you would have to, in a lot of ways, you kind of would need to design any building for this.
Yeah, it does make sense, especially with what's been going on. But I guess the question is that they were kind of focusing on the article, and I think it's one worth talking about, is how do you do it? You can do things like they said about with that moat, or things with trying to avoid having like long sight lines that could be dangerous if somebody is using a high powered rifle, or things like having barricades on doors that seem to be more controversial, because you can obviously lock the door, but having a barricade would make it tough potentially for people to escape if they needed to, or have people get in who are rescuers, or first responders. So I feel like there, and it's interesting because when I was just up in visiting some of my wife's family in around the Youngstown, Ohio area, they were talking about some of the measures that they took place at their school. And this was a little suburb of Youngstown. But like, it sounded like it took a long time to like process people, like parents going to pick up their kids, like from kindergarten. Like they have to like go through this security procedure to pick up their kids. It just seemed excessive to me. And like, I know at the school that my daughter went to for grade school, and this was a grade school, but the grade school that she went to, they did have like drills for, shooter drills, which, bummed me out, but I could see why they would do that.
That's one of those things that recently it caught me as, oh man, that's a bummer. But then it dawned on me where we had like the bomb shelter.
Oh, I remember we did weather drills and things like that. Yeah. I don't know if we ever did like an actual bomb shelter. I can't remember.
I feel like we might have done that at St. Mary's.
I definitely remember weather.
There were definitely weather ones where you just got to, it's like, oh man, I got out of class. Awesome.
Right.
Like, no one was ever bummed about that unless it was the dead of winter.
Right.
Then everyone was pissed because they were outside without a coat on.
Staying out in the cold, right. But, It is unfortunate, but they...
And I guess I at least heard about the bomb shelter stuff when we were in grade school, which is equally bumming, man. Like, it was just like, oh, really? Like, that was one of those things? I guess that never happened, so it's not as real as a school shooting, unfortunately.
Yeah, I mean, still, as much as you hear about things happening, it's still a small relative chance that something like a school shooting would happen at your school. But I think it kind of still makes sense to prepare for that sort of thing or have at least a plan in general in place.
Yeah, and I'm not sure that there's going to be, much like anything else, I'm not sure that there's a one-size-fits-all kind of a situation. You know, I think that you need to adapt to your environment as to which way you're going to go.
But I also do think that you can overreact and kind of raise anxieties in an unhealthy way by over responding to thing to a threat like this. And one of the things that they talked about in there, the one little detail, I think it was in a school in Kansas that part of their classroom supplies was a box of kitty litter in case they have to be locked in the room for a long time to be able to go to the bathroom. And
just like, what the fuck?
And a Sharpie in order for a teacher to write the time that she applied a tourniquet to a child's limb in case of a major injury to a limb, I suppose. And that's besides being grim as hell. I don't think makes sense to like prepare for that sort of thing. Like, the chances of it happening are so small. Like,
I guess I am surprised that they didn't have a Sharpie to start with.
They probably should have a Sharpie to start with. That's the other thing. Yeah.
I mean,
do you really need a Sharpie just for identifying the, time of a tourniquet?
Yeah, I am concerned about the schools of this country if they cannot afford a Sharpie, at least one Sharpie for each teacher. Buy a box at Staples. I think that that can go around your school. Maybe two or three. Just tell them that they only get one Sharpie a semester or something.
Yeah, I mean, they're also handy for drawing on weather maps. I don't know if you saw that, Kevin. Just as a little aside there, a second sidebar.
No, I have not seen that.
Oh, okay. Well, you should check that one out, too. We live in the worst version of timeline, I guess you could say.
well, I just think that the timeline's always weird.
Yeah.
The more I pull back, the more I from seeing news like that, the more I just go, man, this shit's just batshit all the time. Like, this is just nonstop batshit craziness going on in the world.
Yeah.
It was weird when there were Vikings. It was weird when Genghis Khan was out fucking killing people. It was weird when Vlad the Impaler was throwing people's heads on spears.
Yeah, I guess we're not having that, so that's good.
But it is weird that there's probably more death right now, but it's simply because the population is like quintuple what it used to be.
Well, I don't know. I feel like there probably is less wars and things, but it does feel like the world is becoming less stable as we're watching it. Things are going weird over in Britain. I saw the Prime Minister's brother quit his job in his brother's cabinet because he disagreed with how he was handling things. That's pretty rough.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah, the world's going to keep it weird for us. Like, when we finally sign off on OPA 539.
Yeah, and I was reading another article.
It's still going to be weird.
That was laying out the case for, really, if the United States central federal government sort of fell apart and we sort of split into regional power, you know, countries, that really wouldn't be the worst thing in the world. And I could kind of see how that might work out. So I don't know.
Yeah, it would be far more like Europe than it kind of sort of is already.
Mm-hmm. It kind of makes sense to have...
People really downplay how much... Like, I know that each state kind of gets some type of label. Mm-hmm. But, I mean, that really is the difference between, like, being in France and being in Germany, basically. Like, the Ohio-Pennsylvania thing, like, there's not that much of a divide, but I moved here and everyone made fun of my accent. Like, I did not realize how heavy it was at the time. I know that I've lost a good portion of it. I know that occasionally it does come back, or at least I can understand it when I'm back in Altoona.
Yeah, it is kind of funny that you don't have to travel that far of a distance to kind of come across different cultures here. So I and the article was also, I think.
Yeah, so I don't think it would be the worst thing. Like, I mean, no. It would probably work quite, you know, it's not like everyone says, oh, we're going to dynamite all the roads. I mean, if someone did that kind of craziness, then we might be talking. But as long as we're still all interconnected.
And you still would have the internet, I think.
Yeah.
And you could still have... maybe have more like focus on local issues and you know, kind of be like after the period of the Roman Empire falling, which they were making the point that it really everything wasn't all that bad, really. You know, things changed, but it kind of ended up that the empire then kind of developed into more modern countries like we know today. So I don't know. It could be not such a bad thing. I guess I'm trying to find a silver lining here somewhere.
Well, I still just think that in general, countries have been more stable.
Yeah.
Is the Civil War... Well, no, I shouldn't say the Civil War. So I'm sure that there has been some other civil wars. And I was already popping in my head Bosnia and Herzegovina.
Mm-hmm.
kind of having their problems.
There was a... little bit of a business in Ukraine here a couple years ago.
So there is still kind of that stuff, but I don't feel like there's been like...
Well, Syria, of course, we forgot about somehow.
But there's so little land there. Like, I guess that's kind of one of those things. Like, the U.S. definitely would involve a lot more people. Like, there hasn't been, to me, like a large country that's completely fractured. Or, like, completely... I mean, because really, Russia is probably the closest that we've come.
In our lifetimes.
Yeah. In our lifetime. And even that was fairly, you know... Obviously, Putin's hasn't taken it laying down. But it's also been fairly civil for the most part.
Well, yeah. I would say that's probably been the biggest breakup in our time. But that sort of led to the, you know, the rise of the oligarchs who basically took control of all the industries that had been controlled by the government. So, I mean, there's been repercussions from that.
Yeah, and there's definitely going to be some unforeseen repercussions if the United States decided to just be either 50 small countries or... Like you said, I mean, maybe it could be regional. Maybe OPA is its own, you know, part of a country. Or maybe it's Michigan and Ohio, since Michigan isn't attached to anyone else.
I think they were imagining kind of California and Texas being able to basically operate as countries and then having, like, the Midwestern states kind of grouped together, like the East Coast states, you know.
A, it depends upon what your definition of Midwest is.
Mm-hmm.
Because I was told by one of my ex-coworkers that anything basically west of Philadelphia was Midwest. And I'm just like, I grew up in the Midwest? Like, I guess Central Pennsylvania, you know, after I thought about it a little bit longer, I'm like, yeah, Central Pennsylvania really isn't East Coast.
I think your friend has a bit of an aggressive definition for what the Midwest is. But yeah,
I still think it's a little aggressive.
I would say, yeah, Ohio is generally considered the one of the like
the start of Eastern Midwest.
Yeah. But yeah, I suppose everybody can have their own definitions.
And yeah, I just don't want Indiana.
It does seem like Pennsylvania could split in the middle, potentially. There's like, I feel like between Western and Eastern Pennsylvania, there's really not like strong ties there.
The Sheets, Wawa dividing line.
Yeah.
Although I feel like Philadelphia might get State College, Ken. They're just entirely too few Pittsburgh fans up there. The more and more I hear about the amount of Philly fans up there, it kind of makes me even sicker than it does to start with.
Yeah, I know there was a lot of people from like eastern area, like especially New Jersey, I feel like.
Oh.
Who could be Philly fans as well, I don't know. But yeah, that area does draw a lot of Penn State people to come in. So I don't know. Although I did end up rooming with people from Pittsburgh, so
True.
It's true from that way as well. But
it's damn true, Ken.
Wow, we seem to have come to the end of our time here, Kevin.
Yeah, we have chewed a lot of grass on the Steelers.
Turf, even. Yeah.
School shootings and disc golf. So now comes the time of bell time beer. Beer of the evening. That one I talked about that is in your hands, Three Taverns, A Night, and Ponce IPA. I talked about it on the show this week with Chris. What are your thoughts before I do any chiming in?
I was enjoying it and disappointed that it was over, that I had consumed it all.
I was in the same boat. Like that one was that was a very good find in Georgia.
Yeah,
so I was quite happy with that pickup, even though I did not, as I've already noted, and did not remember picking that up when we were down in Georgia. But there's nowhere else I was buying that. So
this is not like nationally distributed, would you say?
No, I got that when I went down to St. Simon Island. It is not easy to get national distribution.
Right.
You know, that's why certain people, even like...
it took Yingling a long time, for sure. We know that.
Yeah. It also takes a lot of production to go nationwide.
Mm-hmm.
That's why some people like Platform Beer Company... that started in Cleveland and have a brew pub here in Columbus. They signed on with Budweiser recently. There is slightly less outrage about that, though. You know, I'm just going to say that maybe I will not be attending their beer as much as I used to.
Well, it would be hard to, I think, ramp up your quantity and then keep the quality. That'd be tricky to pull off. But this was quite good and worth checking out if you can.
Yeah, and then I took a trip into Pittsburgh last weekend to go to the niece's birthday party. And I did a lot of running around to grab beverages while I was there. I did not drink so many. I did drink a couple while I was there. But most of them were bought and brought back. This one was from Grist House, if you do remember that from the bachelor party. Space Cactus, a New England IPA. Very like Once Upon a Night in Ponce.
A Night in Ponce. Yes.
You know, it does have a... Just because it's a New England IPA, it's definitely a little juicier, very citrusy, not as You know, it's kind of funny. You can definitely taste hops more in that than this. Like, I do always feel like the New England IPAs, because of the just the way that it's brewed, you kind of taste like what's on the top of the hops, but not like you don't kind of dig down deep into the bitterness of the hops. And that's certainly something more that I appreciate more than the bitterness that can come out in a regular IPA. Although the bitterness can help counteract some of the sweetness of certain hops too.
Yeah.
So there's a delicate balance that can be struck, but I definitely find myself leaning towards more of these New England style IPAs. And if you are in Pittsburgh, I highly recommend going to Grist House.
Is that the place that had the higher alcohol content beers that we stopped at?
No, that is a been a renamed brewery now, and I'm trying to remember
Okay.
because that was Dry Log. But Grist House was the one where there was the Mac and Gold truck there, the food truck. It was
Oh
kind of down, like it
yeah.
was
There was like
literally in a neighborhood.
the mountain kind of was behind it there with the steps that went up the side of it, or the big whatever big hill or whatever you
Yeah,
call
the Big Hill.
it. Yeah, I remember that. That was a cool place. Yeah, I do remember that.
Yeah, so I've had a couple of good experiences there, and I know I have one other beer from them waiting to be consumed, because I picked up a couple of four packs for that I split with my brother, since he doesn't get to go to downtown Pittsburgh as much as he'd like, so I picked up a bunch of beer.
Cool.
So yeah, there's the Belt Time beers of the night. I'm at Frang 11. He's at Gozer 33. The brand is at Stunt Granny. Rate and review us on iTunes, SoundCloud, or wherever you happen to listen to us. And have a good night.
See ya.